A Spring Society, A Pride and Prejudice Novella Variation, Chapter 2. The library at Pemberley was so immense, taking up the southern wing of the home, that as Mr. Darcy stormed in to confront his uncles, he took no notice of the two persons sitting at the table in the back corner, perpendicular to the doorway. Still, the sudden noise of the two double wooden doors opening caused both Kitty and Robert Fitzwilliam to freeze, though the master of the house stalked away with his back to them. They waited until Mr. Darcy was clear of the large Atlas reference tables in the middle of the room and nearly to the comfortable seating area over by the fire before Kitty dared to giggle. Even Robert finally let out a sigh of relief. Kitty dipped her quill in an inkwell as she felt Robert lean over in his chair to look over her shoulder. She thought carefully before adding a line, "And to what end should I consider your patronage, my lord?" "Oh, what I wouldn't give to see this performed. You truly have a talent, Miss Catherine." Kitty blushed as her shoulders tensed. 3 times now in the last hour, a compliment regarding her writing had passed Viscount Ashbourne's lips. And as the 4th daughter of 5, though now the youngest with the loss of her dearest sister, Lydia, the previous summer, she was not accustomed to attention, let alone compliments. "I suppose the best actors of the work will have to live in our minds," she said sincerely. Outbursts from the other side of the library attracted their attention, and they both reddened with embarrassment. "How dare you accuse my family again of abusing your kindness?" The Earl of Matlock could be heard from across the room as he stood and faced his nephew, who pinched the bridge of his nose in exasperation. After a moment, the men's voices quieted, and Kitty hurriedly returned her focus to her writing. "What do you suppose they're arguing over?" Kitty asked quietly, not wishing to upset her friend the Viscount, but allowing him an opportunity to vent, if he so desired. She ignored the itchiness of the wig on her head, a condition of being out and about in polite company, until her hair grew back. "Money. 'Tis always about money," Robert scoffed as he picked up pages she had completed of a different folly, one telling the story of a bee who only pollinated the prettiest flowers in a garden, even though the less attractive flowers tried to warn him. But when the bee wouldn't listen, along came a spider and snagged the bee in his web, and the flowers were unable to save him. "As vulgar as it is said to be, I must say it appears to have a great use," Kitty sighed, considering for a moment that if she were able to use her dowry as she wished, she'd pay to publish her works. But that was an unlikely outcome, given that both her sister Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy
insisted Kitty enjoy 1 season in London before committing to a career in writing. Her theatrics at Christmas had secured a delay, but not a reprieve.
"Oh yes, great use and great responsibility and great nuisance, if you ask me." Kitty disliked this side of the Viscount. He was an intelligent man, a delight to discuss poetry and the intricacies of a story, but he was also spoiled. He'd never had to live on economy until very recently, and thought it always to be the result of a deficiency in character, not circumstance. "Well, I did not." "Did not what?" he asked in response. Kitty lifted her quill to place it in its velvet box and capped her inkwell. "I did not ask for your opinion on money." She stood and began to gather her papers, careful to leave the one she most recently penned on top to dry so it would not smear. Robert reached out to grab her wrist.
"I've upset you. I did not intend to. Please do not leave. You'll force me to go sit with them."
His eyes flitted across the room as they both spied Mr. Darcy now walking towards them, a curious expression on his face. Kitty wrested her hand free as the Viscount released his grip and finished collecting her things. She had been more at ease in their rather large family group day by day since she was the last to learn of her favorite sister's demise. But Elizabeth had urged her to retreat to her very generous and gorgeous suite when her emotions began to churn with unpleasantness. Mr. Darcy came upon them formally and bowed his head. "Kitty, may I help you with your papers?" he asked, and his sister by marriage smiled in gratitude. "Darcy, I was just telling Miss Catherine we ought to perform some of her follies after dinner one night." Robert allowed his enthusiasm for diversion to lift his tone as though this were nothing but an elegant house party and not a family in shambles. "Would that please you?" Mr. Darcy asked intently of his wife's sister. Kitty bit her lower lip and with a shy smile, nodded. Mr. Darcy returned her expression with an amused laugh, showing more tenderness to the youngest of the Bennet lot in his home since her painful winter. He had come to admire Kitty's writing.
Then I shall speak with Mrs. Darcy and have it arranged. Would you like to be in charge of selecting the actors? Kitty hesitated, and Robert spoke up. I'll assist her, and we can even ask some of the household staff. It shall be great fun. Darcy frowned. Let me speak to my wife first, if you please, and Mrs. Reynolds for good measure. Mr. Darcy escorted his sister from the library, as he too was on his way upstairs to report to his wife on a number of matters. Robert Fitzwilliam groaned. If he liked horses more, he'd be like his brother Richard and head to the stables. But he never did take to the soreness after a long ride. And his preferred diversions of cards and parties, and particularly opium, were not available to him here. He supposed he could select a new book to read, but no doubt his father would call him over. Instead, the unambitious Viscount waiting to inherit took inspiration from the home's grand hostess herself. He decided to walk in the gardens. In a remarkable feat, the grand estate of Pemberley felt smaller and smaller by the passing day for Fitzwilliam Darcy. His dining room, his library, and even his study provided no refuge from the foibles of his relatives both by marriage and blood. But one sanctuary he and his wife had managed to maintain was his bedroom suite. While the mistress's suite of Mrs. Darcy was often frequented by her mother, sisters, and his aunt, his rooms remained private. The threshold was only crossed by Mr. and Mrs. Darcy and their personal servants, which was the closest attainment of privacy the expecting couple could manage. It was not remarkable then for him to find his wife, many months gone with his child, slumbering peacefully in his bed after he escorted Kitty to her room. Sitting on the edge of the bed, Darcy struggled as quietly as he could to divest himself of his boots and slip in next to his wife. Unfortunately, his efforts disturbed the well-strung mattress, and Elizabeth Darcy's eyes fluttered open. Fitzwilliam, is it time to dress for dinner? She asked. Mr. Darcy leaned back and twisted his torso to kiss his wife's forehead. No, it's still early. Though I have news from Mrs. Reynolds, I'm afraid the menu has required a slight change. Elizabeth grunted as she struggled to push herself up into a sitting position. Rolling side to side to get a bit of momentum, she finally managed to prop up on her elbows and slide her form closer to the headboard. She patted the bed beside her, and Darcy kicked off his stubborn right boot to join her. For a moment, the two merely sat next to one another, and Mr. Darcy reached out to rest a hand across her midsection. The growing babe did not disappoint, as Elizabeth's awakening and movement had disturbed the child. Mr. Darcy felt an odd sensation as a large round part of the fetus moved under his hand. "Do you suppose that's the head?" he asked, questioning his wife for what sacred knowledge she might possess, being the one to carry the child. But Elizabeth laughed. "If it pleases you, then certainly, but I think it might be another part altogether." She reached down to gently press on the other side of her swollen belly, finding what she thought to be the babe's head. She dragged Fitzwilliam's hand over to the same side so he might feel the other rounded area. Then she brought his hand to the original position where they were both rewarded with a swift kick. "Still so strong," he exclaimed as Elizabeth winced, her breathing becoming hitched. "Yes, very strong and uncomfortable," she grumbled as she expertly applied pressure on one side to encourage the baby into a position that didn't kick into her lungs. "Tell me more about the change to dinner." Fitzwilliam's eyes widened as he watched Elizabeth manage her distress, and she had to ask the question again before he responded. "A minor change. The oysters. Your uncle's," she said, and he nodded to affirm. "Fitzwilliam, before you fuss, dearest, I spoke to them. I made it absolutely clear this household has but one mistress, and the staff is now instructed to not give in to their whims against your wishes." Fitzwilliam hastily explained how he had handled the situation, feeling quite proud of himself, until he looked up to spy Elizabeth still frowning. Instead of a restful afternoon with his wife, Fitzwilliam soon found himself alone, in his bed, as Elizabeth rolled away from him and gingerly pushed herself out of bed. "Have I made another misstep?" The last months had been not just a trial from his family members, but also learning the many moods of a wife in a family way. Much of what he said or did resulted in Elizabeth's displeasure, and he almost anticipated the birth of this child, if only to have the return of the cheerful woman he married. "Did you speak about when we might expect either of them to leave our household?" she asked, in a breathless tone, as she looked around for her slippers. She knew she wore into her husband's bedroom, yet they were missing from the place under the bed where she usually left them. When they might leave? Most certainly. And? Fitzwilliam groaned as he left his bed too soon for his taste, helping his wife look for her slippers. Uncle Alistair gave me the justification that he'd like to go up to Starvet House. Elizabeth gasped. But Jane, Darcy lifted his wife's robe from its puddle at the foot of the bed. She had likely removed it before resting, as being so far along in her condition made her very sensitive to heat. Any fire in the house was too warm for her. She had even ceased to meet with cook in the kitchens. Underneath the forgotten robe were the missing slippers. As Mrs. Darcy's eyes followed her husband's down to the very items she had looked for, she waddled forward and slipped them on with a huff, taking her robe from him as well for good measure. He cannot go bother Jane and little Robin, if he learns of the child. We agree heartily on the subject, my dear, but that means to protect the child, we jeopardize your mother. Elizabeth frowned and pressed her forehead against the tall bedpost. Her husband's hands expertly began to knead the knots in her lower back. Elizabeth moaned her thanks. The child is innocent, my mother is a widow, Darcy finished. His wife turned, scrunching up her face in a manner he had found endearing since their engagement. Is it wrong to sacrifice one family member for another? She asked. Darcy shook his head. Not at all. Given that the child will have enough challenges to face as he grows up, I believe we are acting prudently. Elizabeth sighed and nodded. Then she closed her eyes and touched her fingertips to her forehead. And the Matlocks leave in a month with Georgiana and their son? Before Easter? Yes, Darcy answered hesitantly, causing his wife's eyes to fly open. You promised, before the babe. He held up his hands in defense. I did, I do. But you realize this also means sending away my sister. Elizabeth bit her lower lip and gazed down at the elegant Persian rug that covered the floor of her husband's suite. It was not so much that she wanted Georgiana away, but that she wished her home to be simpler, easier to manage once she gave birth. If we keep her here, Elizabeth began, but her husband shook his head. I believe we have all learned the foolishness of trying to make our sisters bend to our will. His defeated tone made Elizabeth smirk, and then she began to chuckle, which drew her husband near to her as he dearly loved to hear her laugh. One kiss led to another, and they took comfort in each other's arms. I am sorry to sound cross and make you feel as though I wish to send your family away, Elizabeth confessed as she rested her head against her husband's shoulder, and he stroked her lower back. I wish to send them away. Remember, I'm the one who kept Alistair in India, Mr. Darcy exclaimed, making his wife laugh even more. Perhaps we should go to India, she said, and he pulled back. Absolutely not. You can barely handle the heat here in early spring. Do you know the temperatures in Calcutta? Elizabeth shook her head, but a reminder of her discomfort made her take a step away from Fitzwilliam and the heat his body produced. I'm merely restless. I wish this baby would come, and then I also wish to keep him safe, forever. Her hands protectively cradled the swollen expanse of her midsection. Fitzwilliam offered her a look of concern that made her startle with a laugh. Oh dear, and now I've gone and worried you. For his part of the conversation, Mr. Darcy stood speechless. He struggled to swallow as any mention of his wife's time to labor brought back so many distressing memories from his childhood with his mother. He closed his eyes and remembered his wife's words the first time they spoke of his fears, that he must remember that he and his sister were safely delivered. I do wish you'd allow me to call my physician from London. Elizabeth shook her head. We are in the business of reducing visitors in the household, Fitzwilliam, not increasing them. And Mr. Darcy realized it was a lost cause. He would not overrule Mrs. Darcy without consequences he didn't wish to pay.